Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
And now it's time for On Our Minds. With the second beheading of an American journalist by the Islamic militant group ISIL, the perils of being a foreign war correspondent have never been so clear. It takes a special kind of courage and dedication to risk your life covering war and conflict. In the past 20 years, more than 60 journalists have died covering conflicts in Syria alone. Many more have been captured and tortured. Among them, the celebrated war correspondent Anthony Lloyd. Earlier this year, he and photographer Jack Hill, both working for the Times of London, were kidnapped by Syrian rebels. Lloyd was severely beaten and shot twice before he managed to escape to Turkey. Now, why do journalists like Lloyd do this? Risk their lives over and over again? Today, we're revisiting Steve Paulson's interview with Lloyd from a decade ago, back when he just published his memoir, My War Gone By, I Miss It So. They started by talking about his first assignment as a photojournalist during the Balkan War.
You didn't have to look very far in Sarajevo to see, the war up pretty close. And the house I was living in was actually pretty well slap bang on the front line, so close to the front line that we could only live in about 4 of the 7 rooms in the house because bullets would come through the windows of the other rooms because they were overlooking the Serb positions directly. And you had to run to get out the front door. You know, you had to run. And the house was hit by fire on a very frequent basis.
And I got the impression that once you went outside, it was kind of like running a gauntlet, especially if you crossed certain streets.
Yeah, there was this fairly notorious street known as Sniper's Alley outside, which was a wide kind of thoroughfare overlooked by high ground to the south, upon which there were, you know, Serb positions, snipers, and machine guns, etc. So, yeah, you had to run pretty fast across that street.
Early on in the book, you write that you wanted to know what it was like to shoot people. And you were actually given the chance by a Bosnian sniper you had gotten to know. Can you tell me about what happened?
Sure. Just to clarify that a bit, I wanted to know what it was to have the psychology of the snipers, because it was so much a sniper's war in Sarajevo. The majority of the people killed in those early days were killed by snipers. So I wanted to know how they thought of their life and their job. And I went off into the hills just at the north side of Sarajevo with a sniper to see him at work. He had this was at night. He had a starlight scope. There was some fighting going on at the front, lots of sound and light from various weapons on the front. And after a bit, he got bored because of the fighting. Everyone was quite low in their trenches, and he handed me the weapon. And surprise, surprise, after a while, a Serb soldier jumped up out of his trench, I think to take a leak, actually. I could see him very clearly in the starlight scope. And I realized how very easy it must be, particularly as a sniper, when you're at a distance. You know, you've got this guy in the scope. It'd be very easy just to squeeze that trigger, and you'd be totally removed from the fact that you're actually taking life. It would just be a hit. That form of killing was very different to some of the other forms of killings that done in the war, which were up close and personal and done with a knife or a through execution or shooting at very close range. But sniping was the kind of weapon form which caused the most fear, I'd say, in Sarajevo.
Well, you write that a lot of the people who ended up in Bosnia, from the UN general down to the BBC correspondent, the aid worker, the mercenary, and you as well, you all wanted the same thing, as you put it, a hit off the action, a walk on the dark side.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. I think that whatever one's job in war, altruism is possible, but it always comes second to one's primary motivation for going, which, if one has a choice, is a personal motivation. I mean, why go to someone's war voluntarily, except certainly in the initial cases, out of curiosity? And, you know, I've met all these people. I've known, you know, senior UN officers very well, well-established TV personalities and war correspondents, etc., etc. And in my mind, at least, they're all linked by the same thing, in that, first of all, they go to war out of a sense of challenge and curiosity. And let's not forget as well, war is pretty damn exciting.
How far did you walk on the dark side?
Well, it took me a long time to come back from however far it was once I returned to peacetime London at the end of it all. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's, sorry, Steve, that's quite a relative question. I don't know how to answer it, you know?
Well, I guess, I mean, early on, you write about how you still had a sense of ethics and there was still something kind of shocking about seeing people get whacked.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to disappear after a while.
Yeah, I think one's threshold is never raised, or is it lowered, so far that one becomes inured to scenes of really shocking mutilation, but certainly the kind of mild horror and surprise that one expresses at the first casualties one sees in a war does fade out pretty quickly. Really, perhaps for no more complex reason, don't you see a lot of people getting killed in war, or certainly a lot of dead people? And if one's perpetually shocked and horrified, one's own resilience is going to be eroded pretty quickly.
There's another thing that comes out in your account of all of this, the macabre kind of sensibility that would sometimes come out of a few episodes. For instance, the time when, I guess it was a Jordanian truck driver had accidentally driven into a Croat zone and when it was gunned down. And you write about how someone reached into the truck and straightened him up and his brain rolled out.
Yeah, Steve, no, he was a bit more than a truck driver. He was a Mujahideen fundamentalist fighter who had gone in with a fire team of four other guys, got lost and driven into the Croat zone, guys he'd been fighting with only a couple of days earlier, and did a frantic U-turn when he realized his mistake to try and get out of it. Died in a hail of gunfire. And yes, exactly that. It's the kind of Croats started prodding at the bodies with, you know, sticks and metal rods, almost like a kind of foreplay to mutilation. One of them hauled him up, and the guy's brain popped out in the road, and then a cat ran out and grabbed the brain. That was pretty pretty macabre.
Did you satisfy your war lust after you'd seen a lot of it?
No. In some ways, the more you saw, the more gripping it became. And since those years, I've been working as a foreign reporter for the Times of London, going to other wars. So I guess the answer is no, my curiosity for war wasn't satisfied.
Now, there's another piece to this story. You became addicted to heroin. How did this fit into what you were doing during this war?
Well, Steve, how it worked is, having gone out to Bosnia at the beginning of 1993 and spent till mid-1996 there, really, each year I was out there, I would come back for perhaps a couple of months each year to the UK. And I found, partly to do with who I was, partly to do with who I was hanging out with in London, and partly a lot, in fact, to do with the difficulties of splicing up, you know, suddenly appearing in peacetime London, that by taking heroin, you could just transcend the whole contradiction and just, you know, not have to face it or deal with it, which sort of worked. War for work and heroin for holidays until the war finished, and I just got left with a habit.
Well, the title of your book is My War Gone By, I Miss It So. You really meant that, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, Steve, my experience of war was a very paradoxical one, because I think that is the nature of war. I certainly can't sit here and go, yeah, war, it's great. But I can't sit here either and be, you know, going through all the usual dull platitudes and cliches about, oh, yeah, it's horrible and revolting. You know, it's both. There are elements there that are really repulsive, and one sees, you know, man at his worst, and often oneself at one's worst too. And there are also elements which are extremely exciting, extremely fulfilling, extremely interesting, and really gripping. And when the Bosnian War finished, God knows, I wouldn't wish it to start again for those poor people. But on another level, yeah, I miss it. It's the most definitive period of my life. It was the best time of my life.
Just because it was so exciting?
It was very exciting, and everything is raised to a new intensity. The friendships one has, the relationships one has, the day-by-day, you know, feeling of feeling alive, and you're somewhere where you feel all your senses are elevated, and it matters. And also, from my mind, that was the most important event in Europe since 1945. We had the same terms coming up again as issues which we hadn't had since the Second World War: fascism, nationalism, multi-ethnicity, tolerance, ethnic tolerance, you know, mass killing and atrocity. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. So to have had all of the former in the environment of the latter was the e-ticket ride.
Anthony Lloyd, talking with Steve Paulson about a decade ago. In May of this year, Lloyd was kidnapped by Syrian rebels, severely beaten and shot twice before he escaped to Turkey. This year, he won the Foreign Reporter of the Year Award. More than 60 journalists have died in Syria alone since 1992.